This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll begin this week with the Radio City Playhouse, their episode from March 28, 1949, titled Luck. After that, it's Information, Please, featuring guest Boris Karloff. This episode's from May 17, 1943.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 30. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob Warren. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Radio City Playhouse. Our story tonight is different from anything we have ever done before. It is titled Luck, and was written by Wilbur Daniel Steele, one of the greatest short story writers in America today. Originally, Mr. Steele wanted to be a painter. We feel that the delicate shading of a master artist is evident in our play tonight, and that it more than lives up to the Playhouse tradition of a fine story expertly told. With us for the first time this evening is Mr. John McGovern. We are very happy to welcome this extremely talented actor to his first appearance on our show. Mr. McGovern, who plays the part of Jennison, is assisted by Bill Lipton, one of our favorite younger actors. Here, then, is Luck by Wilbur Daniel Steele, starring John McGovern and Bill Lipton, Attraction 30, on Radio City Playhouse.
The scene is a scattered little community well up in the mountains on a winter afternoon. Along one of the remote mountain roads, a man is trudging through the crusted snow. His name is Jennison. People call him Jen. There's something unnatural about his appearance, something that makes people wince a little the first time they see him. He's not a young man, and yet he's not old. He's perhaps between 35 and 40. The muscles of his neck seem permanently twisted so that his head sits on his body at a cruelly distorted angle. His face is blotched and purplish, a face deeply etched with lines of pain. He's wearing a tie, which is unusual, and his blue felt hat has been carefully brushed. He's taken great care with his appearance today because he's almost positive that if she gives him any encouragement at all, he'll propose to Hetty Prohl. When he turns in at Judge Prohl's house, he squares his shoulders, and before he knocks at the door, he straightens his tie and removes his blue felt hat.
Jen, how are you?
Hello, Hetty. Hetty, I wanted to say something to you that...
Well, Will Yard is here, Jen. We're going for sleigh ride.
Will is here now?
Oh, don't look so disappointed, Jen.
Hetty, we better be getting started. There isn't much time for... Oh, hello, Jen.
Hello, Will.
Would you like to come with us, Jen?
No, I mean, I'd like to, but I don't think...
I'll see you tonight anyway, Jen. You're coming to the poker game.
Yeah, I am.
So I'll see you at Peter's store, huh?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'd better be going.
Jen, did you have anything you especially wanted to tell me?
No, not especially. I just thought I'd drop by. Wasn't anything important.
Well, goodbye, Jen.
So long, Jen. See you later.
Bye. Goodbye, Hetty. I could be her husband. I could.
Of course you could, Jen. Of course you could. Listen to me. the gutsy part inside of you. The part of you that nobody knows. The part of you that's handsome and clever and witty. I'm the part of you that's young, strong, passionate.
I love her. I'm not so old.
You're older than Will Yard.
I'm just unlucky. I'm always unlucky. What did he have to be there for today? Why today? Why today? When I was going to ask her, I'm always unlucky.
You love her very much, don't you?
But I'm so darned unlucky.
Jen, supposing your luck turned. Someday your luck will turn, Jen. Maybe today, Jen. Maybe even tonight. Maybe you'll win at poker tonight, Jen.
Tonight?
Maybe tonight you'll be lucky, Jen.
Lucky tonight.
Just be sure, Jen. When your luck turns, you're ready for it.
How about one more hand, boys?
Hey, not for me, Jen. You've had too much luck tonight.
You really cleaned up tonight, Jen.
I just seem to feel lucky.
And I'm broke. I've had enough.
Yeah? Well, I haven't. You want to play one more hand, Jen?
If you like, Will.
Well, I've had enough. I'm clean.
I'm not quitting a loser. Supposing you and me play a hand, Jen. Just the two of us.
All right.
Well, you haven't a chance, Will. This is Jen's lucky night.
No such thing as luck. Sooner or later, the cards come out even. How about it, Jen?
Let's go.
All right. I'll ante.
Right.
You deal, Jen.
Okay.
Well, come on, they're shuffled enough. Deal them out.
Okay. I sure feel lucky tonight. 3, 4, 5.
You sure had all the cards. I'll open with 20.
I'll stay.
Give me 3.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll take 1.
I'll bet 50.
50?
I'm not quitting a loser.
Okay. I'll see you and raise your 50.
I'll call. 4 10s.
Sorry, Will. 4 queens.
4 queens?
Jen can't lose.
I told you Jen was lucky.
It's luck, that's all.
Luck, huh? Luck,
he calls. Now, don't get excited, Will.
I'm not excited. I just don't call it luck.
Now, have another drink before you go. It'll keep you warm for the road.
$940. I've won $940, boy. This has sure been my lucky night.
Blast me if that kingdom come, if that 4 queens was luck.
Nah. Take it easy, Will. Don't you go getting sore.
There's no such thing as luck, see? And I'd like to see any man that... So, all right. Here's your money, Jen. I'm going.
Hey, Will, don't forget your grain bags. You left them on the apricot cases.
I got them. Good night, boys.
Gee, it looked for a minute like Yard was going to get nasty. Doggone, I never can tell when he's had too much.
No such thing as luck, he says. Good mother of mine, he's the luckiest devil that ever drew breath.
940, that's it, $940.
Yes, what are you, Jen?
Thank you, Smitty.
Is this right for me, Jen?
Thanks, Peters.
If I was you, Jen, I'd keep well behind Will on your way home. It's a narrow road for two. And the way Will looks, I don't think he'd relish having his heels trod on too much this morning.
Yeah, it's all right when he's sober.
I'm going to...
Have another drink for the road.
No, going down by the pond. They got some fox traps out there. Might take a look at it.
You better give Will a wide berth, else he'll throw you in.
We'd have to have the pond drugged.
Nah, leave Jen alone, boy.
We're only kidding.
Well, I gotta be going. Night.
Okay,
I will.
Be careful of all that dough.
Good night, fellas. I will.
And keep away from Will Yard on your way home. Don't you press your luck too far.
Good night.
You see, Jen, you won, didn't you?
Yes.
$940.
Yes, $940.
Enough to marry Hetty Prohl.
Yes.
More than enough.
I'll ask her. I'll ask her tomorrow.
What about Will Yard, Jen?
I'll ask her anyway.
There's a strange feeling in the air tonight, Jen.
Yes.
Are you nervous? nervous, Jim.
It's cold.
Is that why you're shivering?
Yes, yes, it's cold.
Don't be nervous.
No,
Don't be afraid you'll meet Will Yard, even though he knows you cheated him.
No.
Those four queens were a bit too much. Will Yard knows.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
I didn't cheat him.
Yes, you did.
I didn't want to. I didn't want to.
Will Yard's a big man, Jen. He's strong. He's stronger than you are.
Yes.
Why don't you stand a while and wait? Let him get well ahead of you.
Yes, sir. Well ahead of me.
You wouldn't want to meet him on this road. Too lonely, isn't it?
Yes.
You are afraid, Jen, aren't
no,
you?
No, I'm not afraid.
Listen, Jen. Listen.
What? Who is it? Who is it?
It's me, Jen.
Oh, Will.
I stopped off at Pittner's down below. We had a cup of coffee. What's the matter, Jen?
Why, nothing's the matter, Will. Nothing.
Nervous about something, Jen?
No, no.
Sure?
Sure, yes, I'm sure. I thought you'd be ahead of me, that's all.
It would have been if I hadn't stopped off to see Pittner. Owed him some money. I was figuring to pay up today. Told him I'd been in a little poker game and that I was,
What, Will?
That I'd gone and lost the money.
I sure was lucky.
You weren't lucky. I was a fool. Come on, Jen. Let's not stand here looking at each other like a couple of strange dogs.
Well, you walk faster than I do. You go on ahead.
Well, I got plenty of time. Come on.
Okay, Will.
Come on into the middle of the road. Less snow.
Yeah.
Am I walking too fast?
No, Will.
So you think you were lucky tonight, huh?
Yeah, $940.
There's no such thing as luck, Jen. A man gets what's coming to him in the long run.
Oh, not always.
People tell you I'm lucky. That lucky Devil Yard, they say. I'm not lucky. I'm just smart.
Yes, but look at me, Will. Look at my face. My neck, the way it is. Don't you say I'm unlucky?
Ain't unluckiness, Jen. You're always doing fool things, getting drunk, making fool bargains with your money. And you're lazy, Jen. Lazy.
I'm not lazy.
You never get ahead ever in God's whole world. And it ain't nothing to do with unlucky.
I never wanted to get ahead, Will. Not till... Well, not till lately.
Till Hetty Prohl came home from the seminary with her hair up?
Yes, Will.
Jen.
Yes?
Are you thinking... Oh, no, of course you're not.
What, Will? Thinking what?
Are you sweet on Hetty Prohl? Come on, man. Are you or aren't you?
Yes, 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 Will. I ain't never said it out loud before, but... Oh, I love that girl. I go by Judge Prohl's every day, nearly. I go 5 miles out of my way just to pass her house. I always knock on the door just to say hello. Mostly she asks me in. I just sit there, looking at her. I see her smooth, soft, white neck.
Jen, are you crazy?
I see how the brown hair lays light and warm against her cheek. I imagine how it would feel against my cheek.
Good Lord, Jen, don't be a fool.
Just the same, I'd make her a good husband.
Husband? Husband? You mean you think she'd marry you?
I would, Will. I would make her a good husband. Oh, maybe I wouldn't make her such a good living, but I'd know how to talk to her. I'd know when she was worried. I'd understand her. I'm as much of a man as you are, Will. Underneath, there's a part of me that ain't twisted. We get along fine. Just fine, Hetty and me. As long as she don't look at me.
Then she laughs.
No, she don't. That's a rotten thing to say. It's just that when she looks at me, she... feels sorry for me. Then she's extra kind. Oh, is it my fault that I was born like this? Is it?
It's the fault of somebody. Your father or grandfather or somebody. Don't lay it to luck.
Oh, it's easy for you to talk. Everything always comes easy to you.
If I need luck, I make it. I use my
head. Yes, but I...
You're crazy, Jen. To think that you and Hetty Prohl... Jen, I know how her hair feels against my cheek. Night before last, I asked her to marry me. She said yes.
That's true, Will?
What are you stopping for? Come on, we gotta get home.
Is that true, Will?
We'll be married within a month.
Over my dead body.
What?
I'll see that you don't.
Oh, Jan, quit it. Quit talking that way. Yeah. You're such a baby.
I'll see that you don't.
Yeah? What'll you do about it?
I don't know. I ain't near as big as you are, Will. Besides, you got a gun.
Gun?
What can I do?
Here. Here's my gun. Take it. Go on, take it. That's it.
Now,
what are you going to do? Go on, Jen. Cock it. Go on. That's right. Now, aim it at me. Go on, Jen. You want to kill me? Why don't you? Why don't you shoot?
I can't. Because you're lucky. You know I couldn't do it in cold blood. You know I couldn't.
You can't do anything. Not anything.
I couldn't murder you in cold blood.
Oh, you make me sick snivelling around. You never carry a thing through. You ain't got the guts to do anything.
Oh, wait. Wait, Will. Here's your money. Here. Take it.
I thought you'd get around to that. Those four queens. I knew it all along. That was too raw, Jen. You saved three of them out of your full house two hands back, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I knew you wouldn't be able to keep the money. You can't carry anything through.
Take it. Take all of it.
You're dumb, Jen. Stupid and dumb.
Oh.
I don't want all the money. Just what's mine.
Oh, take it.
Oh, shut up. Stop sniveling. Good Lord, man. You're crying.
Take it.
Can't you shut up? There. I've taken what's mine. Here's the rest. Now, come on.
No.
Well, I'm going home. I'm not going to stand here all night listening to you feeling sorry for yourself.
I got a couple of traps down there by the pond. I'd like to have a look at them before sunup.
Well, I'll be seeing you.
I'm sorry, Will.
Okay, Jen.
Will.
What?
Would you mind leaving me one of them grain bags you got there? If I had the luck to catch that blue fox, I wouldn't want the whole town knowing it.
Sure. Here.
I'll bring it back.
Okay. It's got my name on it anyway.
And, Will, can I keep your gun? I'd just as leave have it in case that fox
got... Fox? Jen, you ain't scared of a fox.
No, but them blue ones should be shot in the eyes so as not to mar the pelt.
Okay, keep the gun.
And, Will.
Yeah?
I'd sure appreciate it if you'd not say anything about the cards.
About you cheating, you mean?
I didn't mean to, Will, honest.
All right, Jen. I won't say a word.
Promise?
On the Bible. I won't let on I've even seen you since I left Peter's store. So long, Jen.
He's gone now, Jen. Now what?
I don't know.
I know, Jen. I know.
I've got to get him.
I know how, Jen. I know how.
How?
He'll never marry Hetty Prohl, Jen.
No.
Never.
Never.
Are you sure he won't marry Hetty Prohl, Jen?
Over my dead body.
That's right, Jen. That's the idea you had back there.
Can I do it?
You can do it, Jen.
Yes.
Do you really think you can kill yourself, Jen?
Yes. Yes, I can.
You can if I help you.
Yes, I can.
Kill yourself.
Yes.
And make it look like murder.
Yes.
Make it look like Will Yard killed you.
Yes, make it look like he killed me.
Think, Jen.
I'm thinking.
We're alone now, you and I. Get everything else out of your mind.
Yes.
The money, Jen. What about the money?
The money. He should have taken all of the money.
Yes, Jen. You'd better get rid of the rest of it.
Yes.
Take it out of your pocket.
Yes.
Now, light a match.
Match, yes.
Now, burn it.
Yes, burn it.
Hold the bills in your hand. There they go. That's it. Now turn your pockets inside out. That's the way. Now what, Jen?
The hole in the ice.
I
need some rocks.
Three or four big rocks, Jen.
Yes.
There's one, Jen. There. Dig at it.
Yes, dig at it. Dig until my hands bleed. I don't care if it hurts. Yeah, they'll wonder what's happened to me. They'll get him. A big, strong man like that pushing me through the ice. Shooting me and pushing me through the ice. For money. A big, strong man like that killing me for money. I can hear what they say. I can hear what all of them will say. I can hear the sheriff arresting him. Arresting Willard.
arrest you for poor Jen's murder, the dirtiest thing ever done in these parts. Isn't that a fierce thing? That Will Yard killing poor old Jen.
I think it's horrible. Horrible.
Will Yard's guilty of murder.
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 Well, don't just sit there dreaming, Jen. Get those rocks into Will Yard's grain sack.
Will Yard guilty of murder.
One more rock, Jen.
They'll hang him. They'll hang him by the neck till it's as twisted as mine. He'll never marry Hetty Prohl. Never, never, never.
Put the rocks into the grain sack, Jen.
Yes.
Now what, Jen?
The footprints.
That's right, Jen. There must be two sets of footprints down to the edge of the pond, and only one set going back.
Yes, he came down with me, pushed me in, went back alone.
Yes, Jen, must up the snow. That's it, Jen. Hurry, Jen. It's getting light. Hurry.
Yes, it's getting light.
Two sets down to the edge, one set going back.
Yes.
Now tie the bag, Jen. Tie the open end of the grain sack.
Yes, tie it up tight.
Hurry.
I'm hurrying.
What's that, Jen?
It's 5:58.
It's 6 o'clock. Jen, it's getting light. Hurry. Now undo your belt. That's it. Now loop your belt through the middle of the bag. That's it. No. Jen, wait.
Stones. I've got to push two stones to each end of the bag and hold the bag in the middle. There. 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 Now loop my belt through the bag. Now.
Now what, Jen?
Now I walk out onto the ice.
Well, go on, Jen.
I don't think...
Jen.
I'll be so cold, so cold. I can't do it. Dear God, I can't do it.
Jen.
I'm afraid to do it.
You can do it, Jen.
No.
You can
no.
do it. Then use the gun.
Gun?
Go out onto the ice. Use the gun. Throw it into the bushes and fall through the hole.
No, I can't. I can't.
That will make it doubly sure, Jen. Use his gun.
Doubly sure.
Use his gun.
He'd never swagger and laugh again. They'll drag the pond and find me shot, too. And the bullet will be from Will Yard's gun. He won't marry Hetty Prohl. He won't. He won't. He won't.
Go on, Jen. Not too far. There.
I don't think...
You can, Jen. You can. Point the gun at your chest, Jen. And when you pull the trigger, you throw the gun into those bushes.
I may not be able to throw it.
You can throw it. Go ahead, Jen. Pull the trigger. Come on, Jen. It's getting light. Come on.
It'll hurt. It'll hurt.
It will hurt for a moment. But you're not afraid of pain.
No.
You've always had pain.
Always had pain, yes. Dear God, always had pain.
Then do it, Jen.
What if they don't get him? What if he gets away? I'm always unlucky. It'd be just my luck that something might happen. That I've forgotten something.
Think, Jen. Think. You won his money. All that money. Peters knows it. Hoddle knows it. Smitty knows it. They all saw you win his money.
And he was mad. He was mad. They knew he was mad. They even said that I'd better keep out of his way when I come home.
Yes, Jen. He was mad and he was drunk.
He was drunk.
He'd had quite a bit to drink and he was mad.
Yes.
You got his gun. And his grain sack, with his name on it.
His grain sack.
They can see where you stopped to talk up there, Jen. The footprints.
Yes, they can see that.
And there are two sets of footprints down to the pond, Jen.
Two sets down.
And only one set going back.
Yes, only one set going back up.
And his gun.
His gun.
And his grain sack.
Grain sack.
It's foolproof, Jen. Foolproof.
Yes, 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 it is. They all know he murdered me. They all know it, all of it.
And Eddie Prue will know it.
He'll never marry him. Never. Never marry a murderer.
Eddie Prue will never marry him.
Never marry him.
And she'll be sorry for you. She'll be sorry for you.
She'll be sorry she wasn't nicer to me, wasn't kinder to me.
She'll be sorry she didn't marry you.
Yes, sorry she didn't marry me.
She'll be sorry.
She'll be sorry.
Then come on, Jen, do it. It's light now, Jen. People will be getting up soon. You've got to carry this through, Jen. You've got to carry this through. It's perfect. It can't go wrong. Willyard's luck has turned at last.
I'll carry it through. Oh, dear God, help me to carry this through. It's perfect. Help me to fix that devil yard. I'll be lucky this time. Not him. I'll do it. I will do it.
Get in, I'll give you a lift.
Thanks, Judge. Thanks a lot.
Get up, May. Come on. Mighty cold morning.
Yep, mighty cold.
What are you doing up at this hour?
Little poker game. Me and Smitty and Hartle and Peters and Jen up at Peters' store. Where you been? Sure didn't expect to see anybody this early in the morning.
I've been into the city. Just came back in the 558.
Have a good trip?
Fine. You have a good poker game?
Jen won all my money.
Jen did? Good, Jen. Saw him down by the pond back there, fooling around with a sack or something, and acting like he didn't want anybody to see him.
He's hunting fox. Doesn't want people to know. Did he see you?
Nope. And I didn't call to him. Thought he might want to ride back with me. He makes me kind of nervous.
Ah, Jen's all right.
I guess so. Well, Will, I'm glad to see you. You'd have had a long walk if I hadn't been on the 558. Lucky I happened along.
Luck? Oh, I don't know. I don't think there's any such thing as luck.
What's that?
That must be Jen. Guess he just caught himself a fox.
I've just heard Luck by Wilbur Daniel Steele. The production was directed by Harry W. Duncan. John McGovern was Jennison. Bill Lipton was the narrator. Other members of the cast included Donald Curtis, Andre Wallace, Eugene Francis, and Ernest Graves. The music was composed and directed by Dr. Roy Shield. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, the tense and very gripping story of a young man who becomes his own fatally dangerous enemy. Wardrobe Trunk. Next week on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody.
Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, Information, Please, continues on its wayward path. Our two regulars, John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, are here to bat them out in consort with our two guests, Jan Struther, creator of Mrs. Miniver, and Boris Karloff, currently scaring the pants off the West Coast in arsenic and old lace. Miss Struther and Mr. Karloff, I should explain, are in a Hollywood studio, and we are here in New York, about 3,000 miles away, and we are to try to communicate by a system of signals which we shall now try out for the first time in the history of Information, Please. Mr. Karloff, what signal are you going to use that I'll know that you're going to answer the question?
Well, I thought I might growl like the monster in Frankenstein.
How do you do that? Well, there are two rows out already here. And how about you, Miss Struther? What are you going to, use?
Well, Harpo Marx lent me this horn. Shall I try it?
Yes, please. That's wonderful. Is Harpo there?
He was just now. I think he's hiding behind something.
Well, maybe
right
the horn
now
scared him. All right, we have the signals arranged, and all we have to do now is to start our transcontinental program with a question from Lee Werber of New York City. Each of these dates in May, this is May, commemorates a specific event. What is it? Let's get two out of three. The first is May 10th. May 10th. Commemorates an event? Yes, that's Miss Struther. Miss Struther?
That's right. Hello?
Yes?
You want to know the answer?
Now, don't be coy. We have no time for that sort of thing.
Well, to start off with, it's my eldest son's birthday, and secondly, it's the day Hitler invaded Norway, and thirdly, it's the day Chamberlain went out.
Well, now, I'm not sure about the first, all right, but he didn't invade Norway in May 10. He invaded the Low Countries.
Oh, my mistake, yes.
And now, what did you say about Chamberlain?
I think it's the day that Chamberlain ceased to be Prime Minister of England.
You sound extremely tentative, Miss Struther, very tentative.
Well,
I'm not sure if that's true. It also commemorates the burning of the books in Germany, May 10th, 1933. That's just 10 years ago. I think, subject to recall, we're going to call that one wrong, and go on to this date, which is May 28th. That commemorates, Mr. Adams?
The birth of the quintuplets.
Yes. Very good, Mr. Adams. And what year was that?
Well, they're supposed to be 8 years old, but I don't know if it was last May 28th. I think it's this May 28th they'll be eight.
They were born 1934. We have no time to figure it out.
Nine.
That's right, Mr. Adams. And finally, May 17th commemorates what event? Miss Struther. Mr. Carlo.
It commemorates the founding of the Home Guard in England.
Well, of all things, I didn't know that. Is that true? May 17th?
I hope so.
You're not making these things up, Mr. Karloff, in that monstrous manner of yours.
I think Churchill had something to say about it over here the other day, didn't
he? That's quite possible. Mr. Adams?
It commemorates the time when Karloff and Struther were out in Hollywood.
You're just making that up.
It's true.
It is true. Is that right, Mr. Karloff, Ms. Struther?
That's right, yes,
yeah.
Here we are.
It commemorates today, you mean. Yes, actually, it commemorates something far more important than that. Today is the fifth anniversary of what, Mr. Kieran?
Of the start of Information, Please.
Yes, haven't you any local pride? The fifth anniversary of Information, Please, And as long as nobody else seems to be doing it, the master of ceremonies will now applaud. I assume, Mr. Karloff, that you were right in your answer about the home guard, and will therefore...
I was exactly right, but I had the wrong date.
Oh, you had the wrong date. Well, in that case, we'll send $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Werber, courtesy of the H.J. Hines Company, plus a set of the Britannica, with the compliments of Mr. Karloff, who remembered the month but not the day. How about this one from Mayor Hyman of Trudeau, New York? I want you to differentiate the following. One, a vampire. Two, a zombie. Three, an ogre. Suppose we start with a vampire. The vampire speaks. Oh, Miss Struther? I beg your pardon, Miss Struther.
That's all right. No, he's the other one. A vampire is, for one thing, it's a kind of bat that sucks blood, human blood.
Yes.
And a zombie is an extremely strong alcoholic mixed drink, of which you're only allowed to have one.
It is something else, though you may not have heard of it, Miss Struther.
Oh, I have, yes. It's called after that.
What is a zombie originally?
I don't know.
Rah! The unburied dead.
Thank you, Mr. Karloff. Mr. Karloff, you are scaring me to death. I'm going to ask you to use some other signal.
I'll fall back on the buzzer.
All right, because I shall never be able to last out this half hour. An ogre, finally. An ogre? Mr. Adams?
An ogre is a Karloff. In sheep's clothing.
Is that right, Mr. Ogre?
You say it to my face, Adams.
That's the hard part, Karloff. Yeah, an ogre is a... What does he do, Mr. Adams, when he's not Karloff?
He scares people.
Yes, but Mr. Karloff?
Well, he's a giant.
Yes, he's a giant.
One thing.
Often. Mr. Kieran?
He eats little children.
Yes, little children, or middle-sized children, almost any size. That gives
us... Sometimes he has only one eye in the middle of his forehead.
Have you ever acted the part, Mr. Karloff?
No, but I hope to.
Here's one from Mrs. Alma T. Hutchinson of Elizabeth, New Jersey. Where, in fact or in fiction, do you find people dressed as follows? First, dressed in green. Dressed in green. I have Hollywood calling. Miss Struther? Miss Karloff?
Robin Hood and his merry men.
Robin Hood and his merry men. Very good.
In Lincoln Green.
In Lincoln Green, yes. How about people who are dressed in pearl buttons? And I presumably something else, too. Was that Mr. Karloff?
It was both of us.
All right, Mr. Karloff.
We might say it together.
It's the London
costermongers.
Yes, you'll have to explain that to us. What are costermongers?
They're chaps who live in the East End, and they sell a lot of old clothes and things like that, and they have a little barrow and a donkey, and on bank holidays, they go out with these huge buttons all over their clothes.
Yes, now that's very quaint. What does the word costermonger come from, Carla?
I haven't the least idea.
Do you, Miss Brother?
No, do you want me to guess?
Yes, please.
Well, I should think it was something to do with the couturier, you know, costume people who sold bits of rag and stuff, bought bits of rag and stuff.
That's very
Doesn't
quick
sound
thinking.
Convincing.
Very quick thinking. Absolutely wrong, Jan, but very quick
Good,
thinking.
Yeah.
No, in the old days, these fellows sold custard, C-O-S-T-A-R-D-S, which I learn here, is a species of large, ribbed apple. Now, do you know the answer, Miss Brother, in case it ever comes up again at our 10th anniversary? How about people who are all dressed in white? Where do you find them, Mr. Kieran?
Cleaning our streets.
Very true, Mr. Kieran. I hadn't thought of the men in white, that sort of man in white. You'd find them, Mr. Kieran?
Also in an operating room.
Also in an operating room, Mr. Adams?
That's what I thought. In
also the bride is all dressed in white.
No,
oh,
not
always.
No.
No? Doesn't it say in that wedding march here, Miss Struther?
Something old and something new, something borrowed and something blue, so she isn't all dressed in white.
Well, doesn't it say, here comes the bride all dressed in white,
may say so, but it isn't the fact.
A misquotation, eh? All right. Gives us three colors out of three. Try this from Margaret A. Tarmey of Hartford, Connecticut, who advocated an international organization based upon the idea of a United States of Europe. Mr. Karloff.
I think it was a man named Briand, a French statesman.
Exactly right, Mr. Karloff. Aristide Briand, some years ago, advocated the United States of Europe. He was a little ahead of his time. And who advocated an organization based upon the union of the British Empire and the United States? Mr. Kieran?
Clarence Strite.
Clarence Strite has a famous plan for such a union. And finally, who advocated an international organization based upon the union of England and France? Miss Strother?
Well, Winston Churchill suggested it, didn't he?
Yes, at what time? At what juncture in history?
Just a little too late, the day that France fell, or the day before France fell.
Just before it surrendered, that's quite right. Miss D. Anderson of Merrick, Long Island, sends this one in. It's a nursery rhyme question. Who in nursery rhymes was thrown downstairs? Thrown downstairs? Miss Brother?
I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Yes, who was it?
It's...
An old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
Old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
Yes, that's right. Very good. From Goosey Goosey Gander. And how about the who was beaten all around the town? Beaten all around the town? Mr. Karloff.
It was the Lion and the Unicorn, I think.
Well, will you tell us about them, Mr. Karloff?
The Lion and the Unicorn. Mm-hmm.
We're fighting for the crown.
Fighting for the crown.
Yes.
The Lion.
Yes.
Took the unicorn
beat
him around the town.
Yes, yes, very good. And how about who was whipped and lashed? Whipped and lashed, Mr. Kieran?
A pony.
Tell us
she
about
whipped
the pony.
Him, she lashed him, she drove him through the mire. I wouldn't lend my pony again for all the ladies' hire.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. And now I'm going to ask our Heinz reporter a question. Can you tell us, Mr. Grauer, which one of the Heinz 57 varieties came first?
Yes, and you're going to be surprised at the answer. It wasn't pickles. No, the first of the Heinz services to the housewives of America was the grating of horseradish. Pickles came second. And then a few years later, Heinz started making their famous tomato ketchup and chili sauce. Probably you'd have found Heinz mustard, Worcestershire, and pepper sauce and other condiments standing in one of those old-fashioned castor sets on your own grandfather's table back in the 90s. As the years have gone by, Heinz has taken on a lot of different cooking jobs, 57 varieties of them. Right now, in spite of war work and army ration requirements, we are still brewing rich, old-fashioned soups, fixing food for the babies, putting up jellies and relishes to help set a better table for millions of American families. That's why we say to you ladies busy with war work as well as housework, look to that lucky number 57. It's been a symbol of neighborly helpfulness for three generations.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. We'll go on with a question from Charles L. Burbank of Attleboro, Massachusetts. In speaking to young ladies, we often use endearing terms, it says here. No matter what your sentiment may be, according to dictionary definitions, what are you actually calling her when you call her the following? In other words, what is the literal meaning of the following words of endearment? The first is very old-fashioned. I don't think they use it much anymore. Adorable. Adorable. What does it literally mean when you call a girl, Miss Brother?
Suitable to be prayed to.
Suitable to be prayed to is exactly right. What were you going to say, Mr. Adams?
Same thing.
Right?
To be worshipped.
I don't believe it.
She phrases it well, doesn't she, Mr. Adams? How about, this will be more familiar. Suppose you call the lady cutie. Cutie. What is the literal meaning? What do you really mean, Miss Strother?
Clever.
Clever. What's it from?
Acute.
And what does acute itself mean? Mr. Kieran?
Sharp.
And, it comes from something which is very sharp.
An angle.
A needle. I think the Latin from which the word comes is the same as the Latin for needle. And finally, you must have, Mr. Adams, you must have said this 1,000 times to people. If you say, hiya, toots, what are you saying, actually? What does toots mean?
I don't know. That's what I call Miss Strother.
Thanks a lot.
Anybody, any idea what you really mean when you say toots, Mr.
Kieran? I think it
yes,
it means little feet.
Yes.
Tootsie Wootsies.
Yes, that's right. It comes from Tootsie Wootsie. by metonymy, Mr. Kieran. Isn't that right? Naming the part for the whole. Very good. That gives us 3 out of 3. And also starts a romance between Mr. Adams and Miss Strother. Here's one from James S. Whiten of Denville, New Jersey. Of what illegal act at sea was each of these men guilty? The first is Jean Lafitte. What was Miss Strother?
Piracy or piracy, however you like to pronounce it.
Well, how do you like to pronounce it?
No, smuggling, smuggling.
Oh, you stick to the first one. Piracy
well,
is right.
Well, he did a bit of both.
Yes, he did a bit of both, yes. But piracy was the actual crime that he was guilty of. And what happened to Jean Lafitte? Mr. Curran, do you know what happened to him?
I think he came to a bad ending around New Orleans, didn't
he? Seems a reasonable assumption. How about Fletcher Christian? He was guilty at sea of what illegal act, Mr. Curran?
Mutiny.
Mutiny.
Mutiny on the bounty.
Yes, mutiny on the bounty. Mr. Karloff, what were you going to tell us?
Well, he speaks first. That's the trouble.
That is the trouble. And Lord Jim was guilty of what illegal act? Lord Jim, Mr. Karloff.
He deserted his ship.
Deserted the ship. You find all about Lord Jim where?
In a book called Lord Jim by Joseph Conrad.
Yes, that's quite right, Mr. Karloff. How about this from D.C. Poole of Princeton, New Jersey? Can you mention at least three cliches, conventional phrases, connected with riding or driving horses? For example, to kick over the traces might be one. Let's see if we can get three or four more, Mr. Kieran.
Hold your horses.
Yes, hold your horses. Very good, Mr. Karloff.
To take the bit in your teeth.
Very good, Mr. Karloff. Miss Struther?
To be riding for a fall.
Riding for a fall. Very good. We haven't got an image, Mr. Adams, from you.
I don't know anything about horses.
That ain't hay.
That ain't hay. Very good, Mr. Kieran. Sure. Come a cropper. Feeling his oats and so forth. Any one of those would be very good. Thomas J. Hickey of Silver Springs, Maryland, sends this one in. Miss Struther, anthologies of English poetry generally begin with what lyric? Yes?
Are you addressing this question to me only?
Yes, I just thought I might try you on it. Mr. Adams?
Summer is a-coming in.
Summer is a-coming in. Right. And
Luda sing cuckoo.
Luda sing cuckoo. Now, how about these phrases about summer? They all occur in the opening lines of famous poems, quote, the entire line. The first phrase is, a summer evening. A summer evening, Mr. Adams.
It was a summer evening, Battle of Blenheim.
yes, that's the first line and the title of a poem.
Oh, Casper's work was done.
Yes, and what was he doing?
Sitting in the sun.
Yes, he was before his cottage door and sitting in the sun in order to make the rhythm better. A balmy summer evening. A balmy summer evening, Mr. Kieran.
It was a balmy summer evening and a goodly crowd was there.
Very good, and what was that from?
The Face on the Floor, I believe.
Face on the Floor by Hugh Darcy. Mr. Karloff, you don't recollect that?
No.
A little out of your line. Has the proper classical flavor. How about this one? A summer's day. A summer's day. What's Mr. Struther? Mr. Struther?
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? With a summer's day.
No, to a summer's day.
To a summer's day.
How does it go on?
Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Very good. Can you give us another line or two?
Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. That'll be enough, I think.
Very good. Thank you, Miss Struther. Yes, it's from one of the most famous sonnets of Shakespeare.
Mr. Kieran will tell you the number of the sonnet.
Could you possibly, Mr. Kieran?
I think it's either 16 or 18.
You don't look at me for confirmation.
It's 18,
Mr.
I think.
Oh, you know, Miss Struther.
No, I don't, but I'm guessing.
You've been holding out on it.
That's right, X, V, and three I's.
Oh, that's what you remember. And now, here's our Heinz reporter, Mr. Grauer, with his answer to a question that was asked by William Shakespeare of Stratford-on-Avon. The question is, what's in a name?
We all know that a good name is a mighty precious possession. In every community, there are people whose names mean a great deal. People who are known as hard workers, fair dealers, good neighbors. When they pass that name along to their children, it's something to live up to. Many's the town where being Joe White's or Frank Williams' boy is as much a title as Sir This or Lord That. And that family name also carries a responsibility. The same thing is true of the name of a company like H.J. Heinz, makers of the 57 varieties. In millions of American homes, Heinz has always seemed like the name of an old friend of the family. When Dad and Mother went to housekeeping, and even when Grandmother was a bride, people knew and trusted the Heinz name and Heinz quality. If it's Heinz, they said, it's bound to be good. Now that's a reputation worth working for, worth keeping. And you can be sure that in spite of war scarcities and restrictions, every package that carries the name of Heinz 57 varieties is and will be the finest food that care, skill, and knowledge can prepare.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. How about this one from Mary W. Wells of Indianapolis? This is all about people who are terrorized in one way or another, and Mr. Karloff, you should be on your toes.
I suppose those long claws that you have are toes. Who was terrorized by a dull blue eye with a hideous veil over it? Mr. Karloff?
That's me.
All right, who was it?
It was the old gentleman in The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe.
That's right.
No, it was the boy in The Telltale Heart. It was the old man who had the eye.
That's right. The old man had the eye, and what does the boy do in The Telltale Heart?
He stands in the open doorway and stares at the eye till it gets too much for him. Then he sort of goes in and strangles it.
Yes. That's a sort of happy ending from your point of view,
yes,
isn't it? who was terrorized by a detached hand that moved its five fingers. A detached hand that moved its five fingers. Mr. Karloff, our monstrous
friend. I'm getting a little embarrassed about this.
Why?
But it was a young man, and the hand belonged to his uncle, who had died, and he'd been the victim of automatic writing.
Yeah.
And the hand was chopped off at the uncle's request by an evil spirit that had inhabited him.
Very gay.
And it was sent to the nephew and sort of made things unpleasant for him.
Yes, yes, you put it very nicely.
Called The Beast with Five Fingers.
The Beast with the Five Fingers. And who wrote the story? W.F.
Harvey. That name Harvey?
Yes, that's right. A very good chiller writer, Mr. Karloff. Mr. Karloff, you indulge in the reading of these things as well as in the acting of them, don't you?
Oh, I love them.
How about this one, then? Kieran, by the way, is absolutely white. Who was terrorized by an animal's paw that turned in one's hand? An animal's paw, Mr. Adams.
That was probably the monkey's paw by W.W. Jacobs.
Yes, that's quite right. And who were the people?
I don't know.
Mr. Karloff, have you read the story?
I don't remember its turning in his hand.
Yes, it does, Mr. Atkins.
I think it was the mother and father of a boy who was away.
Yes, that's right. Mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. White were the names. Yes, the paw does actually turn in the hand of one of them at the very end, Mr. Karloff. Try it. It'd give you a new shudder.
I will. Thank you.
Not at all. Not at all. Always glad to make you happy. How about this
thank you.
From Miss Louise Hinchcliffe of Webster, Massachusetts. This is about pursuers and fugitives of one sort or another. A pursuing army was drowned to the last man. What pursuing army, Mr. Kieran?
The army of the Egyptians pursuing Moses and his people across the Red Sea.
Yes, it's exactly right. And you'll find it, as Mr. Adams would say, in Exodus XIV. Here's another set of pursuers and fugitives, or rather one set. A third baseman chased a second baseman. Who are these people, Mr. Kieran?
Heine Zimmerman chased Eddie Collins. Heine Zimmerman was the third baseman, and he chased Eddie Collins across the plate in a World Series. And I was out of the country, so I don't remember. It was either 1917 or 18.
Yes. What were you doing?
I was working for about $33 a month for Uncle Sam.
That is the correct answer. And how about this? A farmer's wife hit back at her pursuers. Miss Struther?
That was the farmer's wife and the three blind mice.
Well, will you prove it? How did she hit back at them?
With a carving knife.
Yes. What did she do, Miss Struther?
She chopped off their tails with a carving knife.
There's one for you, Karloff. Isn't that
right?
Cut off their tails with a carving knife. Very good. Mr. Greeley, W.R. Greeley of Lexington, Massachusetts, sends this one in. This is all about legendary heroes who were made invulnerable in various fashions. What happened to them? The first one was dipped in the River Styx. Oh, I have four hands, apparently. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Achilles who was dipped in the River Styx, but his mother held him by the heel to keep him from going under entirely, so his heel was not invulnerable, and he finally was shot in the heel.
Yes, who shot him?
Well, that I don't remember.
Mr. Karloff?
I think it was Hector, wasn't it?
No, he killed Hector.
Oh. No, I think it was Paris. Paris in the post-Homeric story shot him with an arrow. How about the legendary hero who bathed himself in the dragon's blood and was made invulnerable on that account? What happened to him? Who was he first? One who was bathed, Miss Struther?
I think it was Perseus.
I think it was not Perseus.
Oh.
There's a slight difference of opinion here.
One of us must be wrong, Mr. Kieran.
Would that be St. George?
No, I don't think so. I think it was Siegfried.
Oh.
Remember when Siegfried bathed himself? It's all in Wagner. There was only one exposed spot between the shoulders where a leaf from a linden tree stuck as he took his bath. And later on he was killed by the villain, whose name was Hagen. That's one wrong. We have to get the next one right. This hero, in the case of this hero, his mother got the promise of all living things except one, that he would come to no harm. What happened to him? Miss Struther.
That was Loki, the evil god in Scandinavian mythology. And his mother got everybody to... got the promise of all living things that belonged to the earth or the air, that they wouldn't harm him. But she forgot about the mistletoe, which is a parasite and lives between the earth and the air. And so Balder, his half-brother or something, made a... No, listen, I'm wrong. It was Balder was
the guy that got the promise. That's right, I was waiting for you to correct you. That's quite right. It was
Balder was the guy that they promised about, and Loki, the bad one, made a bow or an arrow out of mistletoe wood, an arrow, I guess.
Yes.
And so he was able to shoot Balder with it, because it didn't belong to the earth or the air. Is that clear?
That is extremely clear. I'm glad you told the whole story, so as to make it clear that it was Balder, the handsome hero who was killed, rather than Loki, the villain.
Yeah, but he came alive again. It was all right.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a happy ending for you, Miss Struther. Now, how about this one for Miss A.J. de Armand of Philadelphia? Who, in fact or fiction, revealed a secret of his past by a mark on his forehead? The secret of his past was revealed by the presence of a mark on his forehead. Come, come, ladies and gentlemen. I'm surprised at all four of you. A mark on his forehead, a mark on his forehead. Mr. Curran? Mr. Carlo.
It might have been Cain.
Yes, indeed, it was Cain. The Lord set a mark upon Cain.
I'm very glad, thank you.
Yes, in The Skin of Our Teeth, Mr. Wilder's play, which has just won the Pulitzer Prize, one of the characters, the son, I imagine is the personification of Cain, because he has a mark on his forehead, too, unless it's bad makeup, I'm not sure. How about one who revealed a secret of his past through a scar on his leg? A scar on his leg. Don't you know, Mr. Adams? Mr. Karloff.
Was that Jean Valjean?
No, it was not.
Oh.
That was a quick passage of conversation, wasn't it? Huh? No, it was Ulysses. Remember, in the Odyssey, Ulysses, after many of his wanderings, comes home and his old nurse, Eurycleia, recognizes him when she washes his feet. And how about one who revealed a secret of his past by the fact that he dragged one leg a little? Mr. Kieran.
That was Jean Valjean.
That was Jean Valjean.
He dragged his leg because he had been chained. He wore a ball attached to his leg when he was in the galley.
I think we'll have time for this from James H. Black of this city. What happens when, quote, love is done? Close quote. Mr. Adams?
Well,
Now, what about a biography, please? Mr. Kieran?
The light of the whole world dies when the light of a whole life dies when world is done by Francis Bourdelon.
Very good. And what happens when, quote, day is done, close quote? Day is done. Mr. Kieran?
I think of you.
That's
the song.
That's
the day
the song,
is done.
Yes. I dream of you. Don't be so intellectual, John. I dream of you. Quote, what happens when, quote, faith is lost? Mr. Kieran?
The man is dead.
Where'd you get that from?
Webster. Charge against Webster.
Yes, Whittier's Ichabod. That's 3 out of 3, and that's all we have time for. Thank you, Miss Struther and Mr. Karloff, for the first-rate transcontinental assistance on Information Please's 5th birthday. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will again be present, along with two guests, the eminent theatrical publicist Richard Maney, and that great lady of the theater, whose name is her introduction, Miss Ethel Barrymore, currently starring in The Corn is Green. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please, 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Grauer.
H.J. Hines invites you to sit in with the experts again next week at this...
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed the shows today. Don't forget to visit the website at relicradio.com to find more from this show, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.